Hello, and welcome to the Space Coast Pet Podcast, the podcast for pets and the people who love them. Now here's your host, veterinarian Dr. Roger Welton.
Happy Thursday morning to my pet-loving listeners, and welcome to the Space Coast Pet Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Roger Welton, coming to you from the Florida Space Coast. It's getting hotter here, folks. We are starting to check out of our bragging rights weather and heading into the hot weather. Some of these days are borderline a little too hot, and pretty soon, before we know it, it's going to be like opening your door and walking into pea soup. And that's where I can get a little uncomfortable here in Florida. But a beautiful sunny day here. I hope everyone's having a lovely morning. Easy commute, whatever that is. We are on the other side of the week, so it's one of the reasons I love broadcasting on Thursdays is you can see Friday. Just one more day. You can start to feel the weekend a little bit and getting a little bit excited about that. I have a episode today based on, yet again, a listener email, and it's such a great topic. It's just too small, or I'm sorry, it's too big to just be able to answer this and have another topic, because it's something I deal with so commonly in clinical practice. The email was sent in by a lady named Paula, and let's just jump right into it, and we'll get into that topic. Hello again, Dr. Roger. I'm so happy that you're recording more. I'm a groomer and often send my clients to your podcast. Could you talk about pica at some point? My apologies if you already covered this. I'm doing some research now, and I feel strongly that my corgi has this. She's obsessed with eating sticks and parts of plants. I can't take my eyes off her outside. I'd be very interested in your professional opinion. Thank you, Paula. Well, first off, let me address the fact that Paula's a groomer. Love your groomer, hug your groomer. These men and women that choose this as a profession are amazing. It is such hard work. You have to really love it to do it, because it takes such precision with patients that commonly don't want to sit still, commonly want to bite them, and somehow they get it done. My hat's off to groomers. You're amazing. So thank you for your email, Paula. Like I said, this is a whole episode. Pica is such a problem among dogs, and it leads to issues all the time. Let's talk about pica. What does it mean? P-I-C-A. It is a tendency for some dogs to have an obsession with eating inanimate objects. These objects can range from anything like sticks hard grass in the case of Paula's dog. It could be personal items like underwear, socks, shirts, pillowcases. It can also be something really strange like rocks. I can't tell you how many like broken teeth I see and rocks stuck in stomachs, because some dogs are just obsessed with eating rocks. It tends to be like my pit bull mix rescues that like to go to the rocks for some reason. But just about any breed of dog can experience pica. So the thing about pica is we got to break it down into medical causes and behavioral causes. And because we can't put these dogs on a couch and have a chat with them and kind of try to understand why they're doing this sort of thing, we really can't jump to a medical conclusion. I'm sorry, a behavioral conclusion without ruling out the medical. So I recommend if your dog's experiencing pica, make a little investment, maybe not little, but you know, a few hundred dollars to just rule out the medical issues that we can see. So let's start with medical, and then we'll get into behavioral. So your dog experiencing pica, there's no other outward signs of illness aside from the times when they dine too much on the inanimate objects and cause GI disturbance. For all intents and purposes, they are healthy. You feed them a good diet and it agrees with them, but they tend to do this. So why do they do this? It is a very, very interesting phenomenon. So medical, I think one of the first things I want to take a look at is just a general wellness profile, because we know that certain endocrine diseases can initiate the behavior of pica. So Paula, I'd really pay attention to this one, because corgis are commonly get hypothyroidism, and that means underactive thyroid, very easy to fix. You just put them on a thyroid supplement, normalize those thyroid levels, and it will often at least alleviate the behavior. We don't know the exact mechanism, but I do know from the human side, and this is speculation, because again, I can't speak to a dog. I wish I could, but I can't. On the human side, fluctuations of the thyroid, you know, I know several people who have hypothyroidism. When they're not right mentally, they know it. And so it could lead to, in my opinion, obsessive compulsive behaviors when their thyroid's not regulated. So another disease on the endocrine side, meaning the hormonal side, that we can see cause pica is Cushing's disease. Cushing's disease is an overabundance of the hormone cortisol in the body. Won't get too much in the mechanism in that, but bottom line is that just a good general wellness profile would give us a thyroid level. And if there was Cushing's disease present, you would likely see biochemical changes that would lead you to additional diagnostic to get to that diagnosis. So both Cushing's and hypothyroidism are very treatable, most certainly worth looking into. So on the medical side as well, hormones they don't always agree with certain dogs. So estrogen can be challenging for some female dogs. Estrogen is a hormone that in mammals has to prepare her for I'm going to say child rearing, but offspring rearing, puppies in the case of dogs, and their animal instinct is to put them on a little bit of an edge because they have to feed these puppies, they have to protect these puppies, they have to be present for these puppies, and they have to do that without a dad always around, right? And so from an evolutionary standpoint, those hormones can cause anxiety. And on the male side, the testosterone, during especially times when female dogs tend to come into heat, which is usually spring and fall, that can be, for some intact male dogs, very tormenting. Because if the wind is right, these dogs are so cued into that smell of a dog in estrus that they could literally smell it from as far as 2 miles away. And imagine, within the radius of where a dog lives, it's smelling it from several females that are coming in heat all over. It could be tormenting to some dogs. So we certainly can see behavioral issues, from an anxiety basis, come from just being intact. So if you have an intact male or female dog with pica, maybe consider them, after ruling out other things, getting them spayed or neutered. There's going to be benefits to that anyway. So that's another thing I would take a look at from the hormonal side. There's also the potential for malabsorptive issues, meaning that you might feed your dog a very good diet, but they're not assimilating it well. One potential cause is that parasites within the gut that are subclinical, we talked about this last time with the GIPCR panel, are taking some of those nutrients away from the patient. Remember we talked about the up until the GIPCR test, which I just learned about literally like 3-4 weeks ago. It's that new. Prior to that, the best accuracy we had in detecting parasites was about 72 to 74% with the gold standard testing for parasites. It's not very good. We were missing a lot. That's certainly something that I would absolutely take a look at. So start with a general profile. Number two, if your dog is intact, male or female, unneutered or unspayed, consider them getting them altered. Still having the pica issue, GIPCR profile, 99%+ accuracy. It's been a godsend to practice as far as GI parasitism is concerned for me. Since my last podcast, I have been amazed what I have found with GIPCR. So potentially your dog is missing some nutrients and it's manifesting as pica. Well, maybe there's a parasite taking those nutrients away. GIPCR will find it, treat that parasite. Maybe the behavior alleviates or goes away. So that would be the third thing I would consider. And then the fourth thing is malassimilation or malabsorption of nutrients, just as a genetically related problem, because the dog lacks the ability to excrete the proper digestive enzymes coming that would normally come primarily from the pancreas to aid in the emulsification of fats and proteins. Specifically, that would be lipase and amylase. There is a test that covers for that, but also covers for the actual nutrients that the patient can assimilate, and then just kind of go right through the patient. And that would be the main B complexes that we're concerned about, cobalamin and folic acid. So there is a profile called a maldigestion profile. It's going to check for pancreatic function. It's called the a TLI test, so canine TLI. And then it's also going to check for cobalamin and folic acid levels. So sometimes the result that I'll get on these is that the pancreas is doing just fine, these excreting enzymes, but hey, look, those B complex, they're really low. And so genetically, that patient might not have the ability to absorb B complex as effectively as they should. It's a genetically inherited defect. You supplement these patients with a little bit of extra B complex, specifically those two, and often could alleviate the problem or even resolve it altogether. So maldigestion profile be the last thing I take a look at. And then you rule, let's say all that comes back perfect. You do the GI PCR, you ran a general well profile, they don't have endocrine disease, they're digesting just perfectly, everything's good. Well, you know, now it's time to look at the behavioral side of things. And, you know, I think the bigger bucket of PICA cases do tend to be behavioral. So what drives that? So in the case of Paula's dog, she's present with the dog and, you know, eating sticks in her presence where she's got to keep a close eye on him. He's not doing it because of separation anxiety. We'll get to separation anxiety in just a little bit. But the dog's doing it for some reason. There's a crave to go there. The way I like to tackle these, and this also applies to the ones that are, you know, chewing plastic and weird stuff and doing it right in front of you. You know, separation-based PICA, that's very, very different. I'm talking about dogs that will do this literally right in front of you, eat rocks right in front of you. I find some dogs don't do well when they're only fed once a day or even twice a day. And as a result, they will exhibit these behaviors. I have a dog that has an obsession with eating grass. And in some dogs, it is actually normal to want to graze on grass a little bit. They just get a craving, and it's not unusual. But my dog takes it to another level. He'll rip up pieces of grass so we can get to the soil. It's really weird. And in his case, the solution I'm getting to did help. Did not make it go away, but made it definitely less profound and consistent. And that is just feeding him more often. So taking his full daily requirement of what he's supposed to eat in the course of an entire day and splitting it up. And what I did with him is three feedings. I couldn't do four feedings. My schedule just doesn't allow it. But the more feedings you could split up the total daily requirement into, the better. So let's say your dog food requirement is one cup of food per day. Well, if you can manage it, feed him a quarter cup four times a day. That might alleviate that PICA behavior because they have mentally, potentially, sort of this oral fixation, and the more frequent meals will help to satisfy that. But then secondly, some of these dogs just get weird cravings, and you know, what serves one dog that may not have these tendencies just fine to eat twice a day. Other dogs that have these issues may just need to eat more frequently. So I would say in that case, try feeding as often as possible, but you don't want to increase the quantities. You just want to increase the frequency. And we don't want to get our dogs fat. But as much as you could split up the feeding, like I said, in my dog's case, the best we can do is three times a day, but it does help. Does he stop eating the grass and dirt? No, but he doesn't go out and he's immediately obsessed with doing that. The second he gets out, he doesn't do that anymore. I do have to watch him and be careful that I don't look away and he starts doing that, because it didn't go away completely, but I will tell you, it made it a lot better. So, you know, Paula, that's another thing I take a look at, is splitting up those feedings and seeing if he does the behavior less often. So, you know, that's our sort of dogs, the behavioral bucket, where, you know, they are literally doing it in front of you or in your presence. Let's talk about the dogs that do it when they're not in your presence. This is our separation anxiety dogs. And these dogs will tend to go after things that are personal items that have your scent on them. Even if they're clean, they still have your scent on them. That can even include pillowcases. That can include t-shirts, socks, underwear. If they have your scent on them, it's going to make them, I guess, feel better, feel closer to you. What's closer than chewing on it? If they have anxiety, maybe they're going to act out at the same time they're trying to alleviate that anxiety that they have about being separated from you, and so they're going to rip up and shred that item. I would say our number one poster dog breed for separation anxiety, Labrador Retrievers. I've had them for most of my life. I love the breed, but that is their one fatal flaw, is they have bad separation anxiety, and it's not just unique to them. They just, I find, most commonly have it, but any breed of dog can have separation anxiety. A lot of rescue dogs can have separation anxiety. So what do you do about separation anxiety? Well, you know, I find that it's very difficult to medicate your way out of separation anxiety. It is very challenging, and I find that things like Prozac, that's commonly used for behavioral disorders, doesn't work. Amitriptyline is another one, Clomicom. I honestly haven't had much success with those. I'd say the one I've had the most success with, and even there limited, is Trazodone, that you would give twice a day. Trazodone is a direct anxiolytic, and they don't get refractory to that, but it also raises serotonin levels in the brain gradually if they're on it all the time. So that can help sort of give them feelings of peace and joy versus that feeling of panic when they're away from you. But, you know, there's no magic bullet. What I find is, like, start with simple solutions first, then go into simple solutions and natural solutions. And then if that's not getting you there, throw in a pharmaceutical to help you out, probably Trazodone. So what are simple solutions? If your dog's got separation anxiety, I think the number one thing you want to do is alter your routine. So we are creatures of habit. We go through the same routine every day, most of us. It helps us stay organized, and it just gives us guidance. I'm a creature of routine. But with a dog with separation anxiety, if they see you going through the same routine every time you're going to leave the house, it's going to mess them up. So I would say the first thing I would start with is, let's say the first thing you do is go to take a shower, and, you know, then you go about getting dressed, and then you take your dog out for a walk or let them in the backyard. Well, let's alter that a little bit. Let's put the dog out first, then take a shower, and, you know, just kind of mix it up all the time. You want to make sure that the dog, when you're going to leave, I recommend crating most separation anxiety dogs, because it gives them a safe place and a safe space to be in. So if you're going to crate a separation anxiety dog, don't crate them right when you're leaving, because the expectation is building up already. You want to crate them, you know, well before you're leaving. Sometimes, you know, do it way before you're leaving. Just alter it so they're not building it up in their own minds. For these dogs, it's also good to not just crate them when you leave the house. Crate them randomly. If you're on the computer or even just cooking dinner, put them in the crate. Give them a treat. Make the crate a happy place. Alter the behavior. As much as you can alter your leaving routine, the better. When you come home, don't go right to the crate to let the dog out and let them go nuts and jump all over you, because you're contributing to, hey, relief is here. Daddy's home. Mommy's home. You don't want to do that. Even if they scream and cry and carry on, leave them in there for a good 15 to 20 minutes. Let them make sure that, hey, you know what? I'm home, but I'm not going to alleviate your anxiety the second I walk through the door, because then it feeds into that, you know, little primitive narrative in their minds that they're going through. So let, you know, ideally, don't let them out until they calm down, even if it takes a half hour or an hour. So that's number one, alter routine. Don't let the crate be always associated with, I'm leaving and I'm coming home and I'm going to let you out. Number two, if that doesn't get us there, I would still do that, but then add in some pheromone therapy. There is a product called Adaptil. Adapt, like I'm adapting to a new environment. So Adapt with an IL. It is a pheromone spray, and it's the pheromone that's released by the lactating female when she has milk letdown. and it makes the puppies feel calm, and it makes them want to come to mama to feed. And literally, that pheromone is put in a bottle. It comes in a spray that you can spray on their bedding, perhaps in the crate. You could spray it on a bandana and tie it around their neck. The spray is good for 6 to 8 hours. Although, if your dog is prone to pica, maybe rethink the bandana. It also comes in a plug-in diffuser where you could plug it into the wall, and it's going to cover a 700 to 800 square foot room space. And it'll do that constantly. You won't smell it, but your dog will, and it's very calming. So that would be my second layer of help for the separation anxiety dogs. And then lastly, if we're not getting there, we throw in the pharmaceutical help, which would be adding trazodone to all that. But there's no one magic bullet on those folks. It's just a matter of, you know, we have to find the right mix for that particular dog, and it's usually a multi-pronged approach. But I would crate these dogs, because even if you find you have it under control, something can set them off. Maybe a thunderstorm or some kind of anxiety, you know, anxiety-inducing event, and they just kind of lose it and they relapse. They can go after all kinds of stuff that can get stuck in their gut and cause them harm. So that's really, you know, pica in a nutshell. It's certainly possible that there is a medical driving issue with the dog, and we don't want to take it for granted that it's simply a behavioral problem. As I said, more often than not, it's behavioral, but we can't make that assumption. So let's go through the process that I outlined from a medical standpoint, and then we get into the behavioral aspect of it. I hope that satisfies your question, Paula. Thank you for your contribution. Really grateful for these listeners taking part and offering up some wonderful topics to talk about, and such pertinent ones. If I don't address your email, you know, just keep them coming. Keep them coming. I can only address one per episode, but I do appreciate the feedback. And maybe if it's not this episode, let's say next week, I'm not particularly inspired by anything at work, and you know, an email. Kind of lacking in pertinent, the emails are lacking pertinent topics. I do archive some of mine, where I'll save some that didn't quite make the cut this week in terms of like piquing my thought process. And wow, this is a must talk about this week. But you know, maybe in the next weeks we'll get to that, especially if you're a regular listener. So thanks again for listening, everybody. I always appreciate you tuning in to hear what I have to say, and I bid you all a wonderful rest of your day.
How powerful is the Cox Network? So powerful that one day the internet will let your doctor perform miracles from thousands of miles away.
Connecting to remote operating room.
Giving a whole new meaning to the term house call.
Operation complete.
The Cox Network. With gig speeds everywhere, it's internet built for tomorrow, today. Cox, bringing us closer. In Cox serviceable areas, speeds vary and are not guaranteed. Cox terms apply. Other restrictions may apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.